Thanks to a generous donor, we've purchased a building for the new studios and offices of Issues Etc., Lutheran Public Radio, and The Word of the Lord Endures Forever.
The donor will match up to $200,000 for the purchase and renovation. The entire cost is approximately $350,000.
You can view an architect's rendering and make a special tax-deductible gift at issuesetc.org.
Or call 618-223-8385.
Thanks for your consideration. Netflix decided it was a good idea to promote a film called Cuties. It was almost immediately accused of promoting the sexualization of children because of the content of this film. The New York Times responded by rather brassly trying to draw an association between the critics of Cuties and conspiracy theories like QAnon. How do we respond to that when we'll be lumped in with conspiracy theorists just because we object to the sexualization of children? Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Joining us to discuss Cuties, Pedophilia, and the Global Ruling Class, Dr. Jennifer Roback Morris, founder and president of the Ruth Institute. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities. She's senior research fellow in economics for the Acton Institute and author of several books, including her latest, The Sexual State, and a recent column titled Cuties Pushes Pedophilia, Not Girl Power. Jennifer, welcome back.
It's been a long time. It's good to talk to you.
Before we turn to our subject, Jennifer, how has Hurricane Laura impacted your family and the Ruth Institute?
We went through Hurricane Laura, which was Category 4 hurricane in Lake Charles, direct hit on our hometown. And our personal home is fine, but one of my colleagues' apartments was pretty much devastated, and the Ruth Institute offices are completely destroyed and unusable, and there's no real estate available in the town. So it's a mercy that Beta has kind of bypassed Lake Charles, because there are a lot of people that have tarps on their roofs and they really don't need more rain, you know. So that's turned out to be a mercy. But yeah, it's a lot to deal with. It's a lot. This is the first natural disaster I personally have ever been through, and it's a real learning experience.
Turning to our subject, you have said that the global ruling class likes pedophilia. What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, Todd, there are just too many instances where they're either guilty themselves or they've looked the other way. Of course, you don't know all the facts in a case like this. You can't. I'm not in a position to prove it in a court of law. But just looking at the publicly available facts, there are just too many instances for us to ignore what the pattern is. So, of course, I got interested in it because of the Catholic Church and the problems we're having in the Catholic Church. That's a global problem. And you could say that the Vatican at the very top is part of the global ruling class in some way. But beyond that, you know, you've got problems in the Boy Scouts and the public school system and Hollywood. Hollywood's terrible. So there's just one thing after another, you know, that are all pointing in the same direction, that these people are either covering for it or active participants in it themselves, or creating ideologies that make it easier for pedophiles to do what they want to do, you know. So the United Nations is very big on promoting children's rights, by which they mean children's rights to have sex without their parents finding out. Well, it turns out one of the people who wrote a handbook on protecting the rights of children, that guy was arrested for pedophilia and is now in jail. Okay, so, you know, there's just too many cases like this. The big picture is pretty clear, even though the details and the names and the exact perpetrators and stuff, that's not clear. But the big picture, I think, is coming into focus for us.
How does this Netflix film, Cuties, fit into your working hypothesis about the global ruling class and pedophilia?
Well, you know, first of all, a lot of people are upset about Cuties. You know, just to review what it is, it's a film that was made in France and got a lot of accolades as a coming of age movie and great art and so on and so forth. And when it was brought to the United States to be broadcast on Netflix, Netflix chose to use this poster that was 11-year-old girls in provocative, highly sexualized twerking photos and sequences. That's how Netflix chose to promote the thing. And so when you look at it, you realize, okay, 11-year-old girls doing these eroticized dancing, what in the heck is going on here? And so when people start complaining about it, Netflix says, oh, geez, so sorry about that poster, but we love this film. It's all good. No problem, you know. And the ruling class kind of circles the wagon around the idea that this is all fine and that people are hyperventilating over nothing. No, I don't agree with that. I think it's one more thread in an increasingly disturbing tapestry that says that there are rich and powerful people who are just fine with underage victims.
So you mentioned now vice presidential nominee Kamala Harris in a recent piece, and you say that she has a record of being soft on pedophilia. How so?
Well, it's a very particular kind of pedophilia. She was, as you probably know, she was attorney general for the city of San Francisco. And it has recently come out from a couple of sources. It's recently come out that prior to her becoming attorney general, there were cases of investigations of Catholic priests in the Archdiocese of San Francisco. When she was elected, all those cases disappeared. When her term was over, now her successor has found cases and is working on cases of pedophilia within the Catholic Church, Catholic priests having sex with underage boys, okay? So during her term of office, she did not prosecute a single case of clergy sex abuse in the city of San Francisco. Now, I find that incredible. Of the 50 largest cities in America over the same period of time, San Francisco is literally the only one that has not a single case prosecuted against the Catholic Church. She couldn't find one priest, living or dead, to investigate. Is that what you're telling me? I'm sorry. I just find that hard to believe. Now, why? I don't know. Campaign contributions, friends of hers, she's tight with somebody here or there, the third place. Who knows exactly why that happened? But I think that's worthy investigation. Todd, do you notice no one in either party has found that a problem? Nobody's investigating her tenure as Attorney General of the City of San Francisco. The Democrats, of course, have nominated her for vice president, and the Republicans aren't interested in asking this question. This whole thing is quite incredible to me.
How do you explain the California Assembly recently weakening, with the governor of California's signature, the prohibition on statutory rape?
Yes. Well, see, this is another element to the thing. Okay. So the head of the LGBT caucus in the State Assembly of California proposed this bill, which the way it works under current law, before they changed this bill, of course, there were penalties for statutory rape, and part of the penalty would be that you would automatically be placed on the sex offender registry, that would be automatic. But there was an exception. If the person was convicted of intercourse with somebody who is within 10 years of their age, provided the victim was 14 years old or older. So Anthony Weiner, you know, and the LGBT caucus thought that that was just a terrible injustice to gay men who had sex partners between the ages of 14 and 17, because a straight man having sex with a girl between the age of 14 and 17, the judge could review the case and not put the person on the sex offender list. But if it was a male partner for anal or oral intercourse, oh, no judicial review. Oh, that's so unfair to gay 20-year-olds who might be having sex with a 16-year-old or a 14-year-old. So unfair. So that's what this bill did, is it said there's judicial review for any case regardless of the offense, which means that instead of overcoming the inequality by increasing the penalties for everyone, they've reduced the penalties for everyone. That's their idea of a legislative priority. Okay, so you tell me, what kind of a mind is worried about that? What kind of a mind gives that the priority? Okay, that's what you're dealing with. And now, not too long ago, a Netflix star was just found guilty or under suspicion or somehow arrested. I forget the exact details. 21-year-old Netflix star sexting and soliciting sex with a 13-year-old and with a 17-year-old boys. Okay? So this is exactly the kind of person that this new bill would protect. A 21-year-old guy having sexual conversations and sexual grooming of 17-year-olds and 13-year-olds. Okay? That's what we're talking about.
How has pop culture, and you mentioned it a little bit before, tended to desensitize everyone to the sexualization of children?
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, that's what this Cuties movie is all about, in a way, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, it's one more thing that desensitizes people and that conveys to people that people of any age are sexual beings and are capable of giving meaningful consent and are deserving of sexual pleasure. You know, that a child is somebody who deserves sexual autonomy, not somebody who deserves the protection of their parents, you know. And so another instance of that would be the Super Bowl halftime show, which took place in January. If you remember, there was a highly eroticized dance on national TV, millions of people watching. This was considered fine. And not only is that considered fine, and because these were obviously grown women doing this dance, but on the stage, they had a children's choir, and there were little girls, some pre-adolescents, who had been singing in this choir, and these girls were brought on the stage as part of the rest of the halftime show when all of the gyrations are going on. And so what that's conveying to people is that what it means to be an empowered woman is to be sexualized in public, to be available as a sexual object, that's what women's empowerment means. Now, as an adult married woman, I can tell you that what I think everybody should be aware of, you know, is that your sex life is a deeply private, personal thing that you would never want your children to see. You know, my husband and I don't want our children, no matter how old they are, to be deeply aware that we're sexual beings, although we are sexual beings, of course, you know, and we have a wonderful sex life and so on and so forth, which is absolutely none of anyone's business, you know, to put sex in its appropriate place between a husband and wife. Not only is it simply between the husband and wife, it is also deeply private, deeply personal. That's what makes it meaningful and beautiful, is the fact that it's the private space between the husband and wife. That idea, which is deeply embedded in really every culture, right, that sex is private, deeply private, that idea has been completely jettisoned by American popular culture, and which I'm sorry to say, we're spreading all across the globe in our various ways that we export pop culture and a lot of the foreign policy and so on and so forth. That vision, that Judeo-Christian vision that sex is something sacred and something designed by God and created by God for the good of the whole family, and that it's private, that's completely lost. And that's what our American pop culture has been so destructive about.
How do you respond to a recent attempt by the New York Times to associate anyone who objected to Cuties with conspiracy theories like QAnon?
Okay, so that was the darndest thing. First of all, I didn't even know what QAnon was. And somebody responded to on Facebook or something. Somebody responded to something I wrote and said, oh, she must be some QAnon person. And I typed in, you know, listen, knucklehead, I've been writing about this stuff for 25 years. I don't even know who these crazy people are. But anyway, what the New York Times was doing is basically deflecting criticism, okay? So this is something the Christians need to really be aware of, the many, many propaganda techniques that are utilized against us. And deflection is one of the most important. What the New York Times said was, basically, I forget the exact phrase that they used, but basically what they were saying was anybody who's concerned about this is part of the QAnon conspiracy. I think what they actually said was the idea that there are people involved, that rich people are involved in pedophilia, oh, that's something peddled by the QAnon conspiracy theorists. Okay, well, maybe they did peddle that theory, but a lot of other people think it too, you know. And so instead of the subject being, is this theory true or not, the subject is, oh, those crazy QAnon people over there, look at them over there. Oh, yeah, let's look at them. Let's not look at the facts of Jeffrey Epstein carrying on his perverted business for years right under the noses of very rich and powerful people, you know, and Jeffrey Epstein supposedly killing himself. let's go over here and look at QAnon and let's talk about them and whether they're crazy or not, okay? That is deflection, and you can't allow yourself to be deflected. Let's come back to the point. Is it true? Are there rich and powerful people who are participating in pedophilia or who are benefiting from it in other ways or who are looking the other way? Are there people doing that? Yes or no? That's what we need to know. Whether crazy people, what crazy people think, that's beyond, that's off the table. And whether the people who think it are all crazy, off the table. The question is it true that the rich and powerful are involved in pedophilia? That's the only question that matters. We got to come back to that every time.
You say that even if the director of Cuties did not herself intend to sexualize children, your point still stands. Explain that if you would.
So you know, I read this interview with her, you know, and she was surprised by all the uproar over it. And the woman is from Senegal. And she, when she moved to France, she saw kids doing these erotic dances and, you know, like at a dance show, a dance studio or something like that. And she noticed that, you know, some of the people were African families and they were in traditional dress and their families are watching this going on the stage. And the lady who ended up making the film, she's like, what in the world is going on? She saw that there was something wrong here, you know, and so the film is supposed to explore it and so on and so forth. So I don't want to say too much about the contents of the film itself because, honestly, I haven't seen the film. But I can picture, I can easily picture as an African immigrant to a Western country looking at these dances, because I've seen these myself when my daughter was doing dance. She wasn't in that type of studio, but some of her friends were and so on and so forth. And I remember looking at this stuff thinking, oh my gosh, I'm glad my daughter does Irish dance. We're not doing that stuff, you know? And so I can imagine people from Africa sitting there watching this wondering, what in the world have we gotten ourselves into leaving Africa and coming to Paris? What is going on here? And so it may be that this director is struggling with that, trying to make sense of it. It looks like she went in the wrong direction with it. You know, she could have gone into the direction of tradition, but be that as it may, whatever it was in France, by the time it got to America, Netflix turned it into something much more erotic by choosing the most eroticized images in the film, evidently, as the way that they promoted the film. And that's not how it was promoted in France. In France, it was a picture of girls going shopping and having fun, you know, and that's the picture that was used on the article that I wrote at the National Catholic Register. They used the poster from France, not the poster from the U.S. So somehow when it crossed the pond, it got even more eroticized on the United States side and by this big corporate entity called Netflix. So it in no way takes away from the idea, you know, even if this woman was in some way innocent or duped or something, which I think is not completely true, but giving her the benefit of the doubt, it's still true that corporate America put the most eroticized pitch on it that was possible to give. And I think it's worth noticing that that's what happened. I mean, we are now more sexually libertine than the French.
Finally, should parents and grandparents be truly concerned about this Netflix film, Cuties?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think parents and grandparents need to be concerned about anything that eroticizes the kids. And by the way, you should be looking at your daughters or granddaughters' dance studios. If they're involved in those type of studios and the dancing is eroticized, you need to take a real close look at that and get your daughters out of that. That's something everyone can do if necessary. And even if you don't have any kids and your kids aren't in that situation, everybody needs to be concerned about the general eroticization and sexualization and pornification of the cultural soup that all of our kids are swimming in.
Dr. Jennifer Roback Morris is founder and president of the Ruth Institute. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason universities. She's senior research fellow in economics for the Acton Institute and author of several books, including her latest, The Sexual State, and a recent column titled Cuties Pushes Pedophilia, Not Girl Power. You can read it and learn more about the Ruth Institute on the Talk On Demand archives page at issuesetc.org. Jen, thank you.
You're very welcome, Todd.
When we return, we think about schools, public schools, private schools, parochial schools, and we usually think about test grades. We think about getting into college. We think about financial outcomes. Why should we be thinking about family outcomes as equal to those considerations when we consider what kind of school to send our kids to? We'll answer that question with Brad Wilcox, co-author of a new study, The Protestant Family Ethic.
The irony, though, is that if they succeed, if they actually do tear this country down, dismantle it as they want to, then the luxury and freedom and comfort that they take for granted really will disappear. And they will finally get the authentic version of the oppression that they so desperately want.
Matt Walsh speaking at this year's Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
Unless we as the rational, we as the moral, we who understand objective truth, objective morality, unless we stand in the way for their sake and for our own.
You can watch and listen to Matt Walsh's presentation, Making the Case Against Woke Culture, with a recording of the 2020 Making the Case Conference. We'll send you links to download a podcast and watch a video stream for a tax-deductible contribution of $250. Find out more at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385.
Where Christianity meets culture, you're listening to Issues Etc.
I'm afraid of death. Do I have enough faith to die? Will it be painful to die? What about deathbed conversions? Does God really forgive me if I've lived my whole life not as a Christian? These and many other questions are answered in the September issue of The Lutheran Witness, The Ars Moriendi, The Art of Dying Well. To subscribe, visit cph.org/witness. The Lutheran Witness, helping you interpret the world from a Lutheran perspective, cph.org/witness.
The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod celebrates and affirms life from the time of conception until natural death, and every time in between. For this reason, LCMS Life Ministry is a program singularly devoted to upholding the sanctity of human life, both in our church body and the culture at large. Life Ministry provides educational materials, hosts conferences, and works closely with allies such as Lutherans for Life. For more information, visit lcms.org/life and follow LCMS Life Ministry on Facebook.
Have you ever wondered if your investments could do more? I mean, a whole lot more? This is Rahema Kavuga, Synod Relations Manager of Lutheran Church Extension Fund. When you invest with us, you not only earn a competitive interest rate, but your investment goes to strengthen Lutheran Church Missouri Synod church workers, congregations, schools, and organizations through low-cost loans and services. To learn more, visit lcef.org/invest101.
It's been 6 years since Ad Crucem started advertising on Issues Etc., and we are so grateful for the support we have received from Pastor Wilkin and his team. In that time, we have increased our inventory substantially. We've added ornaments, church banners, jewelry, posters, and much, much more. But we still offer beautifully printed, theologically sound greeting cards that need no correction. So put away that Sharpie and come on over to adcrucem.com. That's adcrucem.com.